Mid-mornings with Mandy Morton. Cambridge 105.
Now, Stephanie Powers, a Hollywood star and TV icon, is in Cambridge this week, appearing in 84 Charing Cross Road. I spoke to her about the woman she plays. Stephanie, first of all, it's an absolute joy to have you here in Cambridge in 84 Charing Cross Road. And even more wonderful is the fact that this piece of theatre is a true story featuring Helene Hanff. I wonder, for those that haven't bumped into either the book or the stage or the film, you might describe to our listeners your character, basically who Helene Hanff was and what her role is in 84 Charing Cross Road.
Ah, well, first of all, let me start with the project itself. In 1949, a woman who lived in New York, who lived on a shoestring, literally, she was a script reader and aspiring writer whose plays would never get produced. But she had an enormous thirst and desire to enhance her understanding and her library with classical English literature. And those after the war years, England was in terrible state economically and socially, and you were on rations and things were very rough after the Second World War here. And there was an antiquarian bookseller at 84 Charing Cross Road who advertised in a periodical that's published and continues to be published in New York called the Saturday Review of Literature. And she noticed that advertisement and that they specialized in out-of-print and secondhand books, and so she wrote to them. Her life was not what you call a full life, nor was it a life that was filled with family. And she was a very gregarious loner, but very much a loner, and always somebody who was nearly on the edge of complete and utter financial disaster. Her escape, her pursuit and her escape and fantasy life was lived through English literature, most of which she would obtain at libraries. But some of the things which couldn't be obtained at libraries were not available in affordable copies. So what began as a simple pursuit for her to gain more books, to be able to buy more books, resulted in a nearly 30-year communication with and involvement through letters with the man at the bookshop who dealt with her specifically, and his entire staff, because in addition to being able to camouflage an awful lot of things about herself through the letters and through the exchange of words, which she so appreciated. She had a wicked sense of humor, and she would always take the mickey out of everybody, and they got a kick out of that. And through a neighbor in the brownstone that she lived in, who had an English boyfriend, she learned of the food restrictions in England. So she wound up sending, affordable for her, packages of food to Marks and Company, which, of course, was a revelation. Certainly something so unexpected from a stranger, virtually, to be so generous. And the things that she considered to be, I mean, in the United States, we were a land of plenty. Food was extremely cheap. So what we thought was an unacceptable amount of food that was restricted to be consumed here, she just could buy for virtually nothing. Even she, at $40 a week salary, could afford to send food parcels to England. And she did. And this cemented their relationship and led to, through letters, you know, because it's like having a conversation with somebody on an airplane that you don't know and you know you will never meet. While she kept threatening to go to England, it's a questionable fine line whether that was so much her fantasy life and her emotional fantasy, that of course it was always disappointed when some financial crisis would happen. But at the same time, I always think, had she really, really wanted to go, I think she was afraid to go in certain respects. She might have been able to get there, but it didn't work out until she was actually brought there, and from what I understand, kicking and screaming, because James Roos Evans, who took the collection of letters that she then subsequently published, not subsequent to what he did, but after the event of the death of the bookseller, she decided to put the letters together into a book. And this tiny book just flew off the shelves and became a tremendous bestseller. And it was published in England, which was the reason she came here. In the meantime, James Roos Evans somehow got the book. You know, I must ask him that, how he actually found the book, and decided to make it into a play. And so he made the collection, made what you will see on the stage into a play. He met her when she came over here to publicize the book, which was published here within 6 months of it having been published in the United States. He said he took her to lunch. She was a chain smoker and an inveterate talker, this little tiny thing. And he took her to lunch at the Garrick Club, which is a famous actors club in London. They had a no smoking policy in the dining room. And she pulled out a cigarette and lit it up right in the middle of lunch while eating and smoking simultaneously. And she's such a dynamic little person that the waiter came to James Roos Evans and said, "Oh, please tell madam that we do not allow smoking in the dining room." And he said, "I think you should tell her yourself." And of course, he sort of he scurried away because she was very intimidating. That is what our little story is about. It's about the human condition. It's about this wonderful exchange between people. And it's very nostalgic.
How is it to be set? Because you've already told us that it takes place in New York and it takes place in the London Bookshop in Charing Cross Road. I have to say that I've had a sneak preview of the set and it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, it is like walking into a different world. But for our listeners, tell us how it's set and staged.
Ah, well, I would hope that our listeners would come and see it so that they could really understand it. But it's... The stage is divided into his domain and her domain. And so you automatically, I suppose the I've never seen it as a play, so I don't know what the audience does automatically. But from my perspective, I'm not really aware of the other side of the stage. It doesn't exist for me. What exists is the voice. So I can't be objective about it. You have to get that from the audience point of view.
Well, I think it's very beautiful. It is just like walking into an old London bookshop. And equally, it is an apartment in New York with your desk and your typewriter and all the things around you that matter, including packets of cigarettes and all that. I mean, it's just beautiful.
On the desk and obviously.
Do you have to smoke them?
They're not cigarettes. They're herbal something or other. And
stage things.
Have to light them up, yes.
At the beginning of our conversation, I said how thrilled we are to actually have the show in Cambridge. Are you enjoying Cambridge? Do you get time to enjoy Cambridge? You spent all weekend doing sort of performances. You're here for the rest of the week. Do you actually get time to wander?
Well, we're here to work for a start. It's a wonderful atmosphere to work in. I've been to Cambridge before, so... And I have great friends who happen to be the headmaster and his wife of Queen's College. So I've been here quite a few times for their garden party. The last one this summer, I did a reading for them in that extraordinary room that they have where Shakespeare actually was allegedly there to perform with his troupe. So it was quite a treat for me. And I did some readings from Shakespeare for their... while Susie Digby Eatwell, who is the wife of Lord Eatwell, who's the headmaster, is an old friend of mine from many, many years ago. And she is a masterful chorister, as I'm sure you know. She's one of the stars here in Cambridge. And so I don't feel as if this is a new place for me.
That's very good to know, and I hope you'll continue coming back and visiting us.
But unfortunately, ironically, Susie and John are in Los Angeles right now.
Where you also have a home.
Where I also live, and she's doing a master class at the University of Southern California. So they're not here.
Dear. Tell me about you and your relationship with bookshops. I mean, we have some beautiful bookshops, as I'm sure you know, here in Cambridge. Are you somebody that spends time in bookshops?
Absolutely. I'm a great reader of books. I travel a great deal, so the thicker ones, the ones that I can't really move around with because they're too cumbersome, I put on my iPad, but I like holding a book. I truly am from that old school, and I enjoy especially old books because I love the way they were bound and the fact that when they do fall open, and because of the way the binding, hand sewing of so many leaves of pages in one little binding, and then they were all sewn together. And you have a, right next to the theater is an extraordinary tiny hole in the wall with, you know, there's a first edition of Christopher Robbins in there.
The Haunted Bookshop.
The Haunted Bookshop. It's divine.
I wonder if it'll be there by the end of the week.
Oh, that one? Oh, no, I think it has to go somewhere where it's going to be more featured than in my library.